welcome to University Matters on Campus FM. I'm Patricia Camilleri. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research, their international networks, their aims and plans for the future. I shall also be hearing from staff and students about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. This is the programme that keeps you informed about what's happening on campus. I'm very happy to have with me in the studio today for University Matters, Professor Mark Bray. Professor Bray is from the Faculty of Education at the University of Hong Kong. He is here in Malta at the invitation of Professor Ronald Sultana, Director of the Euro-Mediterranean Centre for Education Research here at the University of Malta. Just a brief outline of my guest's career to date. Professor Bray gained his BA from Newcastle and his MSc and PhD from Edinburgh, from the University of Edinburgh. He has taught at the University of Hong Kong since 1986. Prior to that, he was a secondary school teacher in Kenya and Nigeria and taught at the universities of Edinburgh, Papua New Guinea and London. In 1995, he became visiting research fellow at the World Bank in Washington, D.C., and from 2006 to 2010 was director of UNESCO's International Institute for Educational Planning in Paris. In 2012, he was designated as the holder of the UNESCO Chair in Comparative Education. At the University of Hong Kong, Professor Bray has played a leadership role in the development of the Comparative Education Research Centre, established in 1994. He's also been Dean of the Faculty of Education and Head of the Department of Education. His research projects include shadow education, private tutoring, and I know that Professor Bray will shortly be explaining to us exactly what that is all about. Welcome to Malta and to University Matters, Professor Bray.
Thank you. Great pleasure to be here.
Perhaps we can start off by talking about this study, the genesis really of this study that you've written, that you were commissioned to write, perhaps to put this latest study in a context.
The study we're talking about was commissioned by the European Union to look at private tuition in the 27 countries of the European Union. Now, it's got its ancestry in work that I have done over the decades on this theme. I'm coming, as you have remarked, from Hong Kong, and perhaps the Asians are the best known for their tenacity on private tuition, private lessons. Japan, Korea, Hong Kong itself, Taiwan. But now we are seeing the shadow is spreading. Perhaps I need to explain that phrase, shadow education. We often talk of shadow education insofar as private lessons mimic the mainstream, mimic the regular schools. So if, for example, the mathematics curriculum changes in the schools, then it changes in the private lessons after school. And equally, as the sector expands, the mainstream, the regular schools expands, so the tuition expands. That's why it's a shadow system.
In fact, I'm sure that this subject will resonate with our listeners, because Malta is pretty well known, I think, in the world of shadow education. I believe you were telling me before we went on air that I think Malta ranks as third, as the greatest user of this system.
In the European Union, among the 27 countries we looked at, indeed, Malta, we would say, is number three. The champions, though I hesitate to use that word, the champions would be the Greeks, followed by Cyprus. And so the scale of shadow education in Malta is indeed very high.
Perhaps before we go into a bit of detail about what actually is going on with this system, one of the things that I was quite taken aback by when I had a brief look at your study was actually the costs involved. I think as a parent of two children, I really must have spent quite a lot of money over the years in their private tutoring. And of course, when you're looking at it on a European scale, we're talking in sort of millions and millions of whatever, euros or whatever.
Indeed, the costs are huge, and it was the costs that led me into this topic in the first place. I have a background in economics, and I was looking at what parents are spending on education. It's also one of the reasons why policymakers need to look at this phenomenon. The front door says that education is free. The back door says, where is the money? So it's a topic which challenges the facade of fee-free education.
Shall we look a little bit about what drives people to actually spend their hard-earned cash on these private lessons? Because the reasons must be many, myriad,
many.
I suppose.
They're many, they're varied. It depends whether the student is a slow learner or a fast learner. It depends on the signals sent by the schools. It depends on the signals sent by neighbours and other family friends. We know that, in general, it's higher achievers who tend to have more private tuition than lower achievers. Now, sometimes, indeed, tuition is there to allow students to catch up. But a major driver is competition, a sense of competition. And we have seen that competitiveness has grown worldwide. Here we are in Malta, now we're a member of the European Union. I see slogans all over the place about competition within Europe. Migration has greatly increased. People have a sense that they're no longer competing with their own neighbours, with the people on the same island. They're competing internationally and globally. So a lot of it is driven by a sense of anxiety and a sense of competition.
But there are, of course, many different educational systems within the European Union, and probably the Greek system is rather different to the Maltese system.
Yes.
So one wonders, what are the commonalities between them? Why are we all doing it?
If we classify the 27 countries of the European Union, four different groups fall into a shape. We've got Southern Europe, Greece, Cyprus, Malta, they are one group. Private lessons, private tuition have been there for a long time. It's become part of the culture. It has become normal to have private lessons. Back to the numbers, we don't have very good numbers for Malta, but people tell me that at least half of the students can be expected to go to private lessons. I have seen one study which does say half currently receiving private lessons. This was Form 4, Grade 10, and 77% had had lessons at some time during their career. So Southern Europe, it seems to be something which has been there for a long time. Eastern Europe, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, the phenomenon grew with the collapse of the Soviet Union. When the Soviet Union collapsed, teachers' salaries also collapsed. Teachers had to find additional ways to earn an income, and private lessons was a way to do that, and society understood that. In many of these countries, the salaries have gone up, but the culture has remained. And so once it gets into the culture, it's hard to remove it from the culture. Then we've got Western Europe, France, Spain, Portugal, Germany, where it's become acceptable to have marketized education. There are many companies that provide it. They advertise on the metro, they advertise in the newspaper, on the internet, and it's growing with an acceptance of marketization. And then that just leaves Northern Europe, the Scandinavian countries in particular, where it seems that the old model of the school still holds, that parents and families still trust the schools, schools seem to be able to cater for diversity, and they stand out as still different, still like Western Europe used to be. So we've got different patterns indeed around the region.
I was educated in the UK, I was going back to the 60s, and I never had a private lesson in my life. It was considered only for remedial lessons. However, having said that, I had a private education, so my parents were already paying for the education. I don't know whether there would have been that same ethos in government education.
Well, I was educated in the UK in pretty much the same era, and indeed I never heard of private lessons. But in the UK it has grown significantly. The figures are saying 12% of primary school children and 8% of secondary school children are now receiving extra tutoring beyond the school. That's pretty significant. So that's part of the marketisation. Now, it's nothing like the Maltese level, but for the UK, which came from more or less nothing, it's a very significant shift, and it's sending warning signals about how society is changing and how education is changing.
What are the subjects most in demand? I don't know whether that differs from the various areas in Europe.
It does differ insofar as examination systems differ. So it's exams which are a major driver of this phenomenon. So then it depends how the exam has been structured, what is needed, particularly to get into university. Now, the universal is mathematics. Everybody needs mathematics. Mathematics is commonly a challenge to many students, so I think that that's always high. Beyond that, it would be languages, whatever the dominant language is. France, it'll be French. Malta, presumably it's Maltese and English. Italian, and so on. So it's languages. For other subjects, it depends on whether students are allowed to have an arts stream or a science stream. If they go to the science stream, then it'll be physics, chemistry, biology, etc. But hardcore, I would say, mathematics followed by languages.
What about the positive versus the negative
Yes.
of this phenomenon? Because I'm sure there are pros and cons.
Indeed, there are pros and cons. The positive side is young people are learning. They are getting support beyond the school. It depends on the nature of the support. Now, again, in Europe, it's mostly one-to-one or small group support. Coming from Hong Kong, we have large classes. We have so-called star tutors who operate like film stars, and they pull in huge audiences and fill up lecture theatres full of adolescents doing preparation for their exams. That phenomenon I'm not seeing, but I am seeing companies in Europe, the marketization through companies. I'm seeing a huge amount of informal arrangements. So these are the structures of the market which drive the phenomenon. And coming back to your question about the positives, well, young people are learning. That's a good thing. That's something which we want to happen.
What about there are some negatives as well, and I think as a parent I can think of a few, but maybe that would be putting it on the personal. What about the negatives? Do you feel that there are negatives? From your study, what are the negatives that have come out?
The negatives can be looked at from the perspective of the child and the family and from the whole society. The child and the family, education and schooling can become too dominant. Now, at the extreme, children are going to school all day, they come home, have a snack, do the homework, go to the tutor, sleep, wake up, go to school, homework, tutor. It becomes too academic and doesn't leave room for other aspects which are important growth. For families, you've already highlighted the money that needs to be spent on this. Typically what we see is that prosperous families spend money on this, then the middle income families say, oh, we'd better get into this, and then the low income families find that if they don't themselves get into it, then they're not even in the race. And so it comes all the way down until it does become a burden on low-income families. And then, in turn, that takes us to the broader society. There are major implications for social equity. It's fairly obvious that if you've got more money, you can have more tuition, you can have better tuition. If you've got less money, you get no tuition, and you may not then be in the race, or you get inferior tuition.
One of the phenomena that we have here in Malta with regard to time, hours, school
Yes.
hours, is that we have less school hours. I was just reading recently in an article in the newspaper that said there was a European study about school hours, and Maltese had perhaps least, I think, or almost the least number of hours. And that leaves our children perhaps time, more time to actually attend these lessons. I came home from school at 5:30. I finished school. Our last lesson was at 5, religion, if I remember rightly. So by the time I got the bus home, there was absolutely no question of my going to a private lesson. And even the government schools as well actually had all day, whereas we don't have that phenomenon. Do you think that this sort of helps us to become one of the leaders in this system?
Certainly, it's a matter of the hours of schooling and then what do children learn and how families use their school day. And that also leads to a different angle on why families are investing in it, because particularly if both parents are working and perhaps grandparents are not available, families move, they're more mobile than they used to be, then there is another angle of it where the private lessons have a child-minding function, and especially in primary. At secondary, it's less the case. But we are seeing it across the levels. There's a lot of tuition at primary as much as at secondary.
I would imagine at secondary school it would be rather awkward because you have to take your children somewhere. So if you're working, I mean, I would find it difficult. I have a full-time job. I would find it difficult to be able to get up and take a child somewhere in the afternoon.
But the tutoring providers sometimes themselves offer the service of busing. So that's again how the market adapts. They identify a need and they move into the gap.
Entrepreneurs.
Yes.
What about the mainstream schools and the difference between the schooling that you're getting actually in the mainstream school and what you get outside? Is there a difference? Should there be a difference, or should it be a continuation? What is the relationship between these two institutions?
Insofar as we are using the metaphor of shadow education, we're especially looking at mimicry. We're looking at maths in the school, more maths in the private lessons in order to pass the examination. So there's a one-to-one correlation. Now, increasingly, private tutors, private tutoring companies are offering further services, and it can be computing skills or arts and crafts or improve your imaginative powers or all sorts of extra things, peripheral things. Some of them are in arts and music and origami and all sorts of different things. Now, recognizing that that exists and that is also important to many families, and it's part of what the sociologists call social capital. It's part of what makes a young person attractive to certain types of employers later on. That's relevant. But the report that we began the discussion on for the European Union is explicitly focusing on school subjects. So we're looking at shadow education, narrowly defined, mimicry of academic subjects for a fee. We're recognizing the existence of other actors that give it free of charge. They may be community groups and certainly family help, and that's highly desirable. But we're looking here at fee-paying shadow education after school hours.
What about the teachers themselves? Because I always felt slightly awkward as a parent sending my child to private lessons. Does your study take into account at all the attitudes of teachers towards this phenomenon?
Yes, indeed. And the attitudes of teachers are quite varied. I know some teachers who are offended by it. How dare you send your child to extra lessons? I'm a good teacher. Other teachers welcome it. They say any way to learn is a good thing to do. And some teachers actively encourage it. Around the European Union and beyond, the particular case that worries us is when teachers are giving private tuition to their own students. That is highly problematic. Here in Malta, I understand that it's prohibited, it's not allowed, but I also hear that it happens. And why I would be especially worried about that is there's a great temptation for the teacher to relax in the daytime and I'm sure this doesn't happen in Malta, but it has happened elsewhere in the world, where the teacher deliberately shortchanges in the daytime in order to increase the demand for after-school lessons. Now, even if that doesn't happen, what we do find is that teachers who are with their daytime job in the public education system may nevertheless pay more attention to the private sector work, because that is client-driven and quality matters. So in these respects, there is a backwash from the shadow on the body that it is imitating.
This system is... there's also within the system the problem of silence, in the sense that we're talking about it today, and I know as a parent I've spoken about it many times with my friends. But it hasn't really, I don't think, maybe I'm wrong, I don't think it has been discussed in great detail out there. There seems to be perhaps a complicity of silence. Is this right, or is this a correct attitude, or am I wrong?
Certainly it is not talked about enough, in my opinion. So this European Union report itself followed a global study published by UNESCO, the title of which was called Confronting the Shadow Education System. I argued that it needed to be confronted, to be talked about. Now, who should talk about it? Answer, everybody. If there are worries about the social inequalities, let's talk about it. Let's have it on the surface. If there are worries about teachers giving tutoring to their own students, let's, again, have it talked about so that we can work out the mechanisms. I agree with you that the culture of silence doesn't help. It also reflects, from a government perspective, the way that ministries of education see their roles. Now, often ministries of education actually are ministries of schooling. They see their job as supervising the schools, teachers' qualifications, what happens inside school time. They say, well, that stuff in the market, we don't control it, we may not like it, but it's beyond our control and it's beyond our sphere of responsibility. My argument is it has to be looked at, education in school and out of school, because what happens out of school shapes, influences what happens in school.
Absolutely, and later on once they get to university, and yes, I suppose it does have a long-term influence.
It does.
This study that you've done obviously has taken some time and is detailed, and you have quite a lot of information about various the countries of the EU. It's a publication for policymakers.
Correct.
And once you've put it into the hands of these policymakers, yes, you've said it's important, but what are they actually supposed to do with it, really?
They would, and what they are doing, is addressing the existence of the phenomenon. So, for example, teacher training institutions. I myself come from a university where we train teachers. We need our teachers to know that this stuff is happening outside the school as well as within the school. We need to figure out the implications for the out-of-school learning, for the in-school learning. For the wider population, what would governments do? They can have regulations on it. And to me, a starting point, which I'm glad does exist in Malta, is a regulation to say that teachers should not tutor their own students. That, I think, is fundamental. But that does not exist throughout all of the European Union countries. Then the next question is, are teachers allowed to tutor other students? Well, that's up for debate. The companies which are increasingly evident, what should be the rules on those companies? There are business regulations. Should they be paying tax? In my view, yes. That requires them to register. There would be health and safety issues about the size of classrooms. I hear stories, even in Malta, of teachers organizing classes in their garage, converted to make it into a small classroom. Well, hang on, let's have a look at the ventilation If it's in an apartment, what about the fire escapes, toilets, this sort of stuff? Then there may be further regulations on who the tutors are, what they are doing, etc. We are in a situation where, in the second decade of the 21st century, we have regulated our schools very thoroughly. Over the decades, we have got systems in place. The shadow sector is very poorly regulated. In my view, it needs better regulation.
And what about the information in the study? Is there going to be a conference, or will it where people are going to get together and discuss this issue?
This was organized by the European Union. That's one of their functions, is to be a place where people come together. And I'm pleased that the report has attracted significant attention. Listeners who want to find the report can find it by Googling Shadow Education European Union. So that's already helping. Beyond that, there needs to be a lot of discussion at the national level and sometimes the local level. Who's involved in this? Answer, everybody. Schools are involved, teachers' unions are involved, parents are involved, community bodies are involved. And that's part of the solution. If we can get parents and others at least discussing it, then, going back to your earlier remarks, it breaks the silence.
Well, thank you very, very much, Professor Bray, for coming to talk to us about this phenomenon of shadow education, which we're very familiar with here in Malta. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for being with us on University Matters. You can listen to any of the previous interviews in this series on the Campus FM website. I hope you'll join us again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.